Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. Welcome to the Nuance Concentrated Value Semi-Annual Update Call. All lines have been placed on listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for your questions and comments following the presentation. Without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn the floor over to your host, Mr. Paul Gillespie. Mr. Gillespie, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Laura. As Laura mentioned, this is Paul Gillespie, Vice President and Client Portfolio Manager at Nuance Investments. I want to welcome everyone to today's call and thank you for joining. During today's call, we'll do a brief update on the firm, review our year in 2015, and discuss our 2016 outlook. At the end of the call, we will open it up for Q&A. In the email invitation to this call, there was a link to a presentation that we'll be referring to during the call today. If for some reason you don't have the presentation, you can email us at client.services@nuanceinvestments.com, and we'll be happy to send it over. Before we can get into a discussion of our concentrated value strategy, I did want to let you know that this presentation may include statements regarding the intent, belief, or current expectations of our portfolio management team. Actual results may differ materially from such forward-looking statements due to a number of factors, including changes in general economic conditions, market liquidity, market volatility, and other market, financial, or governmental uncertainties. With that, I'll turn it over to Nuance President, Chief Investment Officer, Scott Moore.
Thanks, Paul, and good afternoon, everyone. And thank you for joining us on our Nuance Concentrated Value Semi-Annual Call. Again, my name is Scott Moore. I am the President and CIO of Nuance Investments, as well as the lead portfolio manager for the Nuance Concentrated Value product. To get started, as you can see on page 2 of the presentation, our agenda for today is to give you an update on the firm, an update on our team, a summary of our process, and what happened in 2015, and, of course, very importantly, look forward to 2016 and beyond. On page 3 is a short reminder that we established Nuance Investments in 2008 to be a classic value boutique investment firm with a focus really on all-cap and mid-cap value-styled investment products. Today, we manage nearly $1 billion using our classic value approach, our time-tested philosophy of identifying leading business franchises that are trading at a discount to our own internally derived view of fair value, with an overriding goal to provide you best-in-class risk-adjusted returns. On page 4, you can see our team of 4 investment professionals, all of us, our equity analysts on the team. On each of these conference calls, it is my personal goal to convey to you that we have a very consistent team executing a time-tested and very consistent investment process, and that process and our team has been able to deliver what we want to over a very long time for you, which is top-tier risk-adjusted returns over that long term. Our team is stable, experienced, and very value-focused, and I personally trained each and every person on that chart with a lot of experience. On page 5, you can see a single-page schematic of our process. This process has not changed since the inception of Nuance, and you can be assured that it will not change. It's been around a long time and has seen many peaks and valleys, many troughs, many bubbles, as well as more normal environments in the investment marketplace. Consistency of that process is so critical to the consistent execution of what we're trying to do for you, and of course, achieving long-term risk-adjusted returns is the goal, and without a consistent process, frankly, we would be guessing. So we're certainly not going to do that. A summary of that process, just to make sure everyone in the call, the new and the old, gets a reminder every 6 months of what we're trying to do. First, if you look at that page 5 schematic, we use basic quantitative methods to derive potential leading business franchises that our team of analysts will study. We look at returns on capital, balance sheet strength, and capital spending habits of various firms across 68 different sub-industries to determine the traits that could lead us to finding a potential leading business franchise that we might invest in for our clients. Once we have determined a potential leading business franchise, we then move on to the competitive analysis, where we study in depth the competitive positions of each and every company that we own for our clients to ensure they are, number one, not market share losers, and number two, that they are not going through significant competitive transitions. The goal, again, is a sound and stable competitive position, number one or number two market share position typically within the company's little niche that they operate in, that is sustainable. As a couple of examples, we are avoiding companies, for example, that are in the ATM manufacturing business, like Diebold and NCR. I use this example because it's so classic to what we're doing. Technological shifts have resulted in much less need for us to utilize cash as well as deposit checks, the two primary reasons you go to an ATM, which means that those businesses that manufacture ATMs are going through a major competitive transition. Another example today is we're avoiding coal-related stocks due to what we believe has certainly been historical market share losses to natural gas and more sustainable power sources like wind and solar, but also the fact that based on our analysis, we believe that that loss of share will not be transitory. It will be sustainable market share losses over the very long term. So we don't want to be involved in those companies like the ATM manufacturers, like the coal miners, because frankly, we're guessing at where their level of earnings and EBITDA are going to be. We believe that the historical financial statements for both of those areas, and there's more than just those, are really irrelevant to giving us a view of the future of those companies. That's why it is critical to do a very strict competitive analysis study for all of the companies that we might own for you and your clients. After the competitive study, we then have a very strong conviction that the historical financial statements that we are reviewing are valid and that that historical data can indeed be a guide to the future. Again, without that strong and stable competitive position, we just don't believe the future can be analyzed using historical financial statements with any level of conviction, thus raising our odds of being accurate over time. This third step of our process is our proprietary financial statement work, which we call normalizing within the walls of Nuance. We're normalizing the income statement, the balance sheet, the cash flow statement in total. Our goal is to study historical trends for returns on capital, balance sheet strength, and capital allocation habits. We do that by talking with each of the companies we invest in for you. We talk to their peers. We talk to industry experts, Wall Street analysts as well, and determine not just what the company will make in the next quarter or year. We have no real interest in those exact numbers, but rather what we focus on is what the businesses will earn during more normal environments. Not their peak earnings, not their trough earnings, but more mid-cycle, or what we call sustainable levels of earnings, EBITDA, dividends, and cash flows over time. After all, to determine the business worth of a company, like what is it truly valued at, you need a good and logical level of earnings and cash flows from which to place a multiple on so that you can come up with the value of a business. We believe our normalization process gives us a much better denominator than most people in the marketplace that frankly chase more recent term earnings and where Wall Street might think earnings are going to go in a particular quarter or year. Finally, after having the full valuation, after having the normalized numbers, we perform a full valuation study using our normalized financial statements. We're studying PEs on normal E, enterprise value EBITDA using normal EBITDA, dividend yields using normal levels of dividends per share levels, unlevered free cash flow yields among many other valuation tools at our disposal. Importantly, we study not just what we think a business is worth, and this is very critical, but we also study the potential downside valuation risk of each of the companies that we buy for you. We do that by analyzing historical recessions, historical one-off periods where our competitively advantaged companies might be going through their own one-off problem we believe is transitory, and finding out where the market placed the valuation multiples during multiple down or negative cycles. By doing this work, we can certainly come up with a range of fair value, but very, very importantly, we can also get an estimate of the downside risk, which we believe is largely unique to Nuance, and we believe has contributed greatly to our top-tier risk-adjusted returns versus our peers and certainly versus our benchmark since we came into existence a little over 7 years ago. So with that backdrop, how was 2015 for our clients? How has performance been over time? So turning to page 6 of our presentation, first, 2015 was a solid year for us. We were down 1.98% net of fees versus our primary benchmark, the Russell 3000 Value Index, down 4.14%. That marks the seventh out of 8 years, including our stub year in 2008, where we have outperformed our primary benchmark, and frankly, we're pretty proud of that consistency over time. Seven out of 8 years is solid and certainly something we're quite proud of. We would note that there's some modest disappointment that the S&P 500, our secondary benchmark, did beat us this year as it was up 1.37%. The S&P obviously did a little bit better primarily, if you look at it closely, due to four or five what we believe to be more speculative stocks that do not fit our investment process, names like Facebook, names like Amazon, with valuation multiples that suggest a degree of speculation which we are very uncomfortable with. That's very typical for what I have seen in my history in latter parts of economic cycles and latter parts of valuation cycles. The world kind of becomes a little more motivated by momentum and what has worked, and money flows head towards some of the more speculative stocks. So there's certainly a logical reason in our mind for the S&P 500 to have done a little bit better than our primary benchmark and a little bit better than us last year. We don't like it. We certainly want to beat the S&P 500 as well as our primary benchmark, the Russell 3000 Value Index, over time. And you can see that we have done just that. As for that long term, on the same chart, as we enter into our eighth year here at Nuance, we are proud of our 17.29% net of fees annual percentage rate versus the Russell 3000 value of 12.73 and the S&P 500 of 14.3. Those are just outstanding numbers. For those of you who are potentially interested in what we're doing or have only been investing with us for a short period of time, that longer-term look is something that we would have you focused on quite profoundly, and we're obviously proud of those long-term numbers. Importantly, if you look at the middle data column on page 7, which is our standard deviation, we are among the least risky products. I apologize. Moving lastly on to performance on page 7, it shows our performance versus peers over the long term. You can see we are third percentile versus the Morningstar Large Cap Value Peer Group, 23rd percentile versus the Morningstar Mid Cap Value Peer Group, and 12th percentile versus the Lipper All Cap Value Peer Group. Importantly, as I was getting to just a second ago, a little ahead of myself, if you look at the middle data column on page 7, which is our standard deviation of our returns, we are among the least risky value-oriented products in all three peer groups. And just so everyone knows, the reason we use all three is because our concentrated value product is all cap. There are times when Morningstar considers us large. There are times when they consider us mid. And, of course, we actually think the Lipper all cap group is probably the most appropriate for what we do. But we like to show you all three. We intend to beat all three over time with less risk. Put those numbers all together, again on page 7, the far right-hand data column, and you can see we're first percentile in all of these peer groups since our inception in 2008. So on page 8, transferring to the next page, what drove our outperformance versus the Russell 3000 Value Index in 2015? It was a very interesting year as we saw many of our historically very successful classic value peers really struggle and underperform the benchmark pretty significantly. My first note and probably most interesting comment is that the energy sector was our best performing space. I think most of the people on the call would be pretty surprised by that. Certainly there's an enormous amount of negative rhetoric surrounding the energy space as a whole, and deservedly so, as oil prices and natural gas prices have plummeted. Those plummets result in really the market throwing, you know, just to use a cliche, the baby out with the bathwater. There is sometimes in our markets a lack of distinguishment between high-quality companies and very leveraged low-quality companies. And in our opinion, starting really in the very latter parts of 2014, when we started becoming overweight in energy, into the early parts of 2015, that phenomenon was indeed what was occurring. Our primary two holdings, Cameron International and Franks International, were actually both up last year on a total return basis versus the energy world down, depending on which benchmark you look at, roughly 30%. We think that highlights our internal focus on stock selection, as both of these companies have outstanding balance sheets, large service components of their business, which means they generate significant EBITDA even during trough energy cycles. You contrast the Franks International, ticker symbol FI, Cameron International, ticker symbol CAM, to leveraged energy E&P stocks with basically no way of calculating the potential downside risk in those stocks. And we think it's a great way of thinking about how what we do is different. Franks International, for example, earns roughly 20% returns on capital during their trough cycles, compared to an broad industrial world that earns those sort of returns in mid-cycles. So an outstanding business with $3 of net cash on the balance sheet, a safe due to the cash and the fact that they're earning money during the trough, 4% plus dividend yield at roughly $14. This is an outstanding risk reward. And again, just contrasting that to a leveraged energy E&P name, generically, I could give you about a dozen of them with no real way to calculate downside risk. I hope you see some of the advantages of the active management style we have here at Nuance over time. Other successful stocks in 2015 were across multiple different industries and sectors. Sysco Foods, for example, was an outstanding stock that we bought over the last couple of years for you when they were going through the middle of an SAP cost transition. They're coming out of that now. The earnings power is starting to accelerate, and we're starting to see the stock obviously move back to where we think it's worth, which has meant very good things for our clients. Chubb, our historically favorite property and casualty insurance name, was purchased by Ace in the middle of the year for roughly a 30% premium. That was just obviously a great stock for us and a really good example of buying a high-quality company that had been underperforming, given us some valuation that we thought was attractive and then was bought out during our holding period. We certainly are not buying stocks for you because we think they can be bought out, but the traits of the businesses we own for you lead to some acquisition activity of our companies over time, because other smart buyers, in our view, want to own leaders that have good balance sheets, that are going through a transitory problem so they can potentially purchase them at reasonable valuations. Other names that worked out really well were Commerce Bank Shares and BOK Financial in the banking industry, and we continue to like that space, as I'll discuss in a moment. Our poor stocks, what struggled for us, really centered on one name, a utility and natural gas combination stock called National Fuel Gas, ticker symbol NFG. That stock, as is often the case during a stock that we really like, that we believe has a sound competitive position and has underperformed, has now become our largest holding as we added significantly on the weakness last year, and we believe is an outstanding risk reward. For more information in the full risk reward story on National Fuel Gas, ticker symbol NFG, I would encourage you to read my Nuance Perspectives commentary. It's on our website from November. You can see all of our monthly commentaries going back to the very beginnings of Nuance Investments. And for some of you, I think that might be very interesting reading if you haven't already done so. But we did an entire commentary on NFG. It's an outstanding risk reward and gives another flavor of the different ways we think about risk rewards for our clients' portfolios. So our final topic today is the 2016 outlook, and you can turn to page 9 to see our team's notes. First, we continue to like energy as a theme with our weighting centered again on Franks International, a duopoly competitive position in the highly engineered tubular systems business, under-earning their potential due to two reasons. One, obviously lack of drilling activity in the oil and natural gas world due to very compressed prices, for those commodities, as well as significant under-earnings due to that aforementioned $3 of net cash per share on the balance sheet, which is earning nothing at today's level of interest rates. Today, the company's earning around 50 cents. They're under-earning from an operational perspective by about 50, and that cash can lead to potentially another 50 cents per share over the next couple of years, whether they buy back stock, whether they do accretive acquisitions, whatever they may be doing, that is going to be surprise earnings power to those folks who have not done their homework on Frank's International. That would lead us to normalized earnings of about $1.50, and the stock today trading around $14 to $15 creates a 10 times our normalized earnings risk reward that we think is just outstanding. We're also very excited about National Fuel Gas. As I mentioned before, this combination natural gas utility with stable utility-like EBITDA that we believe it's about half of their business and we think is worth in the neighborhood of $40 to $45 per share alone, paying us over a 4% dividend yield is very attractive. The company's earning about $3 per share today, and we think normal is closer to $5. The under-earnings is largely due to two factors. Number one, the other 50% of their business that is not natural gas utility and FERC-regulated pipelines is natural gas E&P that today with natural gas MCF of about $2 is under-earning what we think is normal. And then secondarily, we think they're under-earning because they have yet to create a master limited partnership for their FERC-regulated pipelines. That would lead us to increased after-tax cash flows that would accrue to us as shareholders and lead to normal earnings of about $5. This is a very underfollowed stock, in my opinion, and I think some of these phenomena that we're discussing are just really not well understood at National Fuel Gas because of that lack of Wall Street coverage. Put that together, the stock today at 45 or 46, less than 10 times with a solid balance sheet, and again, that outstanding over 4% dividend yield. Lastly, I would mention that we are really starting to like financial stocks, again, which have been growing significantly and waiting for us in the past 3 to 6 months. A company like BOK Financial, which we have owned for our clients before, we were actually reducing it earlier this year around in the $70 range. After a modestly, I mean modestly, disappointing fourth quarter is now trading at $45 to $50, which is very close to tangible book value, right on a little less than 9 times our view of normal earnings. That creates a risk reward that is outstanding. That stock is a market share gaining, high quality bank in Oklahoma with an outstanding overcapitalized balance sheet. This is not a risky levered bank. And when you can purchase this particular financial stock at around tangible book value, there is minimal downside risk and significant upside potential in our opinion. We're also adding to names like Commerce Bank Shares and recently reentered Northern Trust, which is one of our favorite financial stocks as well. After selling the stock really earlier in the year at significantly higher prices, around kind of in the low to mid-70s. Stock's now back below 60, kind of in the $58 range, with over $5 of normal earnings at Northern Trust. We're now starting to get around 12 times earnings for a very high-quality financial company, which we think is attractive in today's marketplace. So in sum, our portfolio is comprised of leading business franchises with excellent, mostly under-leveraged balance sheets, and that's a very important point, at roughly 12 times our normal earnings per share versus what we believe the market alternatives are, which are at 16 to 7 times normalized earnings with more leverage balance sheets in general. The areas in the market that we see significant risk is very important in my comments today. In fact, frankly, if there was one item that I would have you take from these comments, it would be this. It surprises us, to say the least, to see many of our companies that are on our group of 250 leading business franchises boosting their short-term earnings using debt at levels that we believe suggest in significant increases to downside risk. The most surprising part to us is that the leverage is coming from historically more stable sectors like the consumer staples area as well as more cyclical areas like consumer cyclicals. The use of leverage is back in spades, and it is resulting in us being able to use our active management style to make sure that we avoid the overvalued and over-leveraged businesses and make sure that what we're buying for our clients are the underappreciated, undervalued companies without the leverage, something like a Frank, something like a National Fuel Gas. Just one quick example, a company like Kellogg's, a name that many of you who've been with us for a long time know that we have liked and owned and made significant money for our clients. They've taken their debt to EBITDA from historical levels around 2 to 2.5 times to around 3.5 to 4 times by our work. And the stock's trading at about 19 times earnings, which is higher than history would suggest it should. Just a simple refresher of all of our basic finance courses that we all took would tell you, all things being equal, as businesses increase the level of leverage within the companies, the PE multiple must go down to reflect that increased risk. What we're seeing across many, many spaces is that increased leverage is actually being seen by the market as a positive, and we're seeing expanding PE multiples on expanding leverage. Leverage exacerbates downside risk significantly, and we are seeing sharp examples of companies forgetting that fact in today's market. Your portfolios, I believe, are quite exciting over the next few years, given the sharp difference between overvalued and undervalued stocks, with most of the undervalued stocks that we own being actually under-leveraged versus where most of the overvaluation is being in cases where leverage has actually been increased. So that's pretty exciting for us. It does bode risk to the market as a whole, but we think that risk is actually providing us with a really good opportunity. So lastly, in conclusion, this year alone, just a very short update on 2016. We're 1 month in. For that first month, with the market down about 5%, we were down 2.25%. We believe that is some early signs of the market figuring out some of these differences. We're seeing some differentiators. We're seeing some areas where the under-levered businesses with some valuation support are really holding in very well through this increased market volatility. We obviously hope it continues. We hope for our clients that you see overall the consistency of our team, the consistency of our process, and the steadfast way we focus on finding you the very best risk rewards for your clients and for your families and for yourself. And with that, I'll stop my comments and I'll open it up to any questions.
Certainly. The floor is now open for questions. If you do have a question, please press the number 7 or the letter Q on your telephone keypad. Questions will be taken in the order that they were received, and if at any point your question has been answered, you may press 7 or Q again to disable your request. Please hold while we wait for the first question. Our first question comes from Anthony Howe. Anthony, please go ahead.
Hi, congratulations on a wonderful year, and it sounds very exciting. Could you spend a few moments? I see on one of your slides you mentioned Deere as one of the holdings that's under-earning. Could you talk about the farm cycle? I noticed the price of crops are awful low, and they're saying farm incomes are low. Could you talk a little bit about John Deere?
Absolutely, Anthony, and thank you for the question. I think John Deere is a really fantastic example of what we're trying to do for our clients. John Deere has been on our approved list, a name that we have been following and covering for a very long time. If you think about the agricultural space, you know, over the last decade, there has been a constant theme of, quote, feed the world, an expectation by the marketplace that all things commodity agriculture would grow at above average GDP rates forever. That meant an almost cult-like following for stocks like John Deere for a very long time. What we saw at Nuance was multiple years of over-earnings, which led to significant increases in capital spending relative to depreciation rates and really an excess capacity phenomenon at most agriculture-related stocks and firms like a John Deere. That was a few years ago. Fast forward to today, that overcapacity has resulted in what classically occurs in really most of the stocks that we have that have any degree of cyclicality. And what happens is returns on capital go from peak levels to trough levels at the same time that we see commodity prices like for corn and beans and wheat fall to more normal or below normal levels for those commodities. It's coincident. What we want to do for our clients is make sure that we don't use those peak numbers when we're valuing businesses, when everybody likes the stocks. At that point, they're overvalued, and the risk rewards are actually negatively skewed. What we want to do is be patient, allow the under-earnings to manifest itself. We actually study historical trough periods for John Deere. They're not quite to historical troughs, but the returns on capital, level of earnings power today, level of EBITDA are getting very close to some of their more difficult historical levels. So what does that mean? It sounds negative, doesn't it? But in fact, what it means for our risk reward is very good things. Because the market is so negative, the stock price now reflects recession-like characteristics within the ag space. But what we believe we have in John Deere is a company that will be gaining share over the long term. There is a trend toward what we call precision agriculture that is going on over time that leads to lower costs for farmers over time and very good economic advantages to farmers over time. Increased technology, increased efficiency in the way they're actually doing their agriculture. We think it's a very long-term positive story for a John Deere. The time to buy the stock is when it's under-earning its potential and it's undervalued on those under-earnings. The stock has fallen off markedly, and kind of in the low to mid-70s, we think the risk-reward is fantastic. 12 times or so our normalized earnings with over a 3% dividend yield while we wait. It doesn't mean things couldn't get a little worse before they get better, but we could raise the weighting of John Deere significantly if it gets worse. Today, we're around 4% of concentrated value, and it could be as high as 8 to 10 if things got a little worse before they get better. So we don't have that sort of crystal ball to know whether the stock will go up or down in the near term, but we do know that it's an outstanding business, very good growth prospects versus the rest of the ag world, right place, right time, and fantastic valuation support. So the risk-reward of John Deere versus, you know, for example, some of those becoming levered consumer staple stocks, which everybody seems to love these days, often in the mid-20s price-to-earnings multiples, we think is just a very, very good risk reward. So that's a space that we're really liking right now.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Bob Higley. Bob, please go ahead.
I withdrew the question.
Thank you, Bob.
Again, if you do have a question, please press the number 7 or the letter Q on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Gary Anderson. Gary, please go ahead.
Scott, do you care to comment on the transportation sector?
Thanks, Gary. I appreciate the question. We have begun moving modestly into the transportation sector really over the last 6 to 12 months. You know, the cycle within transportation has mirrored that of agriculture in many ways. We were, over the last 5 to 10 years, seeing some peak returns on capital across the trucking area, as well as some names like UPS and some of the other transportation, like a railroad and those things. We've seen some real slowing over the last 6 to 12 months, whether it's the rails where we're seeing coal volumes fall off and some of the North American oil transportation fall off, or whether it's in trucking where we've seen just some modest economic slowdown result in a little bit of slowing across the transportation sector. For your portfolio, our focus today is on UPS within the transportation sector. We really like that particular company. We bought it roughly a year ago as they really mishandled the Christmas season. They've been gaining significant market share within kind of the world of the transportation world is online retail has resulted in some very good wins at their back over time, but the increased cost to actually make it happen has really been a struggle for UPS. So we're looking as an evolving theme, the broad transportation world, whether it's trucking, a name like Heartland is one of our favorites, an Iowa-based trucker. We're not there yet, but it's coming our way. or you know, whether it's a rail potentially that actually is also potentially coming our way. We're looking at them, but the valuation levels just aren't quite there for us to take a big bite. So the focus right now is on UPS, and we like that stock a lot. They just actually reported this past week. Numbers were pretty good. Stock was up, so it's actually been a good store of value here for the last year, and hopefully now we'll get a little momentum in the stock and get it back to what we think it's worth, which is, you know, at least 20% higher than it is today. Thanks for the question.
Again, if you do have a question, please press the number 7 or the letter Q on your telephone keypad. Mr. Gillespie, it appears we have no further questions at this time.
Thanks, Laura. I want to thank everyone for joining the call today. As a reminder, for more information on Nuance and our concentrated value strategy, you can visit our website. As Scott mentioned, we have all our commentary there. Also, feel free to connect with us on LinkedIn and Twitter. We do post updates there as well. We'll also have a replay of this call on our website beginning next week. If you have any additional questions, please feel free to email us at client.services@nuanceinvestments.com. And thank you for your time today.
Thank you. This does conclude today's teleconference. We appreciate your participation. You may disconnect your line at this time.